Our last speaker is always a delight when she has a story to tell. She's told at least two, maybe more. She grew up in Wisconsin, but now she lives in Paonia, where she hangs out with goats and dogs, she says, but I'm sure she hangs out with other things and people. And she says, like most of us, she's waiting for snow, which I think is totally right. So please welcome our last speaker for the evening, Beth Reboing.
Hi, guys. When I lived just outside of Billings, Montana, I learned to practice the art of stillness, specifically in relation to when I would wake up in my bed. I would be still in the night when I woke up because I was afraid of ghosts. I was living on this goat ranch that was in a really old farmhouse from back in the homesteading days. This house was built, and the downstairs level of the house was the original structure, and then I was living upstairs in an addition. And there were lots of ghost stories from the downstairs part of the house. My friend Alexis, who was my roommate, had lived in the house with her family her whole life, and she had seen a little girl ghost, and her mom and sister had heard an old man and seen an old man and a little girl on the bed. And Mike, who was Alexis's boyfriend and had lived there for about a decade, had a little bit more subtle experience with ghosts. He would see the kitty cat late at night. Mike was a night owl, and he'd see the kitty cat spinning in circles, or the dog Lucy would spin in circles, and then this chill would flow through him, and he attributed this to ghosts. So I was at this goat farm taking care of the goats while my roommates were off saving the world. So I was often home alone, and I'd wake up late at night, and I would cower in my bed, afraid to move and draw the attention of ghosts. And I'd just open one eye and peek at Lucy the dog, who was the dog who adopted me at the farm. And she had a bed in my bedroom. And she would often be staring intently down the stairwell towards the haunted part of the house. So I was pretty sure there were ghosts. In the morning time, I practiced stillness for a very different reason. When I awoke in the morning, I knew that as soon as I moved, Lucy would be on me. And the morning I'm speaking of now was no different. I rolled over, and Lucy jumped from her bed to my bed with her slimy old rotten soccer ball in tow, and pinned me down to the bed with her front paws and panted in my face until I said, "Okay, Magoosey." And that was our code for, okay, it's time to go do chores and take a walk. And so I put my pants on and my socks on, and I was kind of in a hurry to get going because Lucy's bopping her soccer ball up and around my room and making a mess of everything as usual. And So I'm getting into it, though, with Lucy, and I say, "Yes, yes, 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 yes," because that's what we say to redheaded collie dogs, because Lucy's life motto was keep saying yes. So I'm running down the stairs with Lucy and her soccer ball, yes, 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 yes. And I get to the kitchen where my roommates are actually home, and they're sitting around the kitchen table that's been there for at least 3 decades in the same exact spot, and Mike and Alexis are drinking their coffee, talking politics, which is all the usual. But the unusual part is that there's a documentary film crew also in the kitchen. So there's a cameraman and a guy with like a big mic thing holding it over Mike and Alexis. And so I quit saying yes and and go to get a cup of coffee. And it's kind of not that unusual in this farmstead to run across strangers. There's always people passing through. It's a revolving door of environmental activists. And this film crew was here because my roommates are these pretty amazing activists that were leading the charge to fight a coal mine proposal and a coal railroad proposal in the Tongue River Valley of Montana. It's one of the most beautiful valleys I've ever seen, and it's steeped in like deep cultural heritage. There's this coal train that was proposed was going to run through, just cut across like several ranches, fourth, fifth, sixth generation ranches, and it was also going to, the mine was going to threaten the water supply of the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. And not only that, but it was going to cut through all these areas of deep spiritual significance to the tribe. The tribe had actually been forcibly removed from the region and sent to Oklahoma to a reservation way back. And that winter, most of the able-bodied folks in the tribe turned right around and walked back to Montana and risked that to get back to their homeland. And so this was a deeply contested fight that my roommates were leading the charge in. And so this documentary film crew was kind of par for the course. But I wasn't super into having them in my kitchen. I enjoyed some of the other people who passed through as friends with a lot of the activists. And quite recently, we had this guy named Kelvin sleep on the couch. And in the morning, I'd often eat breakfast with the activists who had slept over the night before. And we'd share venison and eggs from the chickens. And Kelvin told this story, a ghost story. The night before, while sleeping on the couch, something approached him, and he woke to some force pulling his blanket down. And he said that this thing felt like it was like just curious and wanted to check him out. But as one does in a ghost attack, Kelvin tried to pull the blanket over his head for protection. And the force wouldn't let him, so he was like in this tug of war, he said, and then he's a kind of spiritual guy, and he decided he'd pray, and as soon as he started praying, this force left him alone. So that was like my kind of breakfast conversation, but this morning with the film crew is kind of like, well, I don't want to talk politics again. So I went to get my cup of coffee around the corner of the cupboard, and crouching behind the cupboard was the director of the film. He was hiding to be not in the shot. So I was out. And me and Lucy went to go pitch hay to the goats. And I was pitching a lot of hay that season because the goats weren't eating off of one of their pastures. They only had three pastures, but they wouldn't eat off of one of them. So we pitched hay, and then me and Lucy went for our walk, and that involved me kicking the soccer ball for Lucy to do all kinds of awesome tricks to catch it. And we went through one gate and another gate, and we got to the back pasture on the way to the Yellowstone River. It's in the back of this property. And the back pasture was kind of a disaster zone. I kicked the ball, and if Lucy missed, which was quite rare, but she missed once or twice, and I would just see the ball skittering over like dirt clods in this one type of weed. There is just one plant growing in the whole pasture, and then it was an invasive species. And I was feeling kind of heady the day of this walk with this documentary film crew over. And it's like, man, if I was in the documentary, I'd talk about thresholds. Because thresholds was this ecological idea that I got back in college, and it stuck with me. A threshold, when a system passes through a threshold, an ecological system, it undergoes a series of small stresses that accumulate until one seemingly small stress pushes the system into a new form of functionality where it's irreversible from what it used to be. So this pasture, say, is telling Lucy that the threshold, it started, the first stress was maybe like before even Sitting Bull went and had his vision that led to the tribe's victory over Custer at Custer's Last Stand, which happened the vision was in the Tongue River Valley where this coal mine was. But in that era, the bison were getting pushed out as the Native Americans were getting pushed out. And the land was getting fenced and the pronghorns were being replaced by cows and goats in this instance. And then over time, the river got managed and manipulated and the flow rate changed. And then climate change snuck in there somewhere. So we were having these crazy events of unpredictable and extreme weather. And then there'd be an invasive species here and there cropping up while the native diversity fell away. And then boom, in July in 2011, my roommates woke up. I wasn't living there yet. My roommates woke up to this horrible chemical smell and they had headaches and they went to investigate and they found their back pasture, this pasture where I was walking Lucy. It was covered in oil. There was ExxonMobil had a pipeline under the Yellowstone River and it had ruptured in the floodwaters. And 1,000 barrels or so of oil spilled into the river, and since it was floodwaters, up into the floodplain. And so it just drenched the buffer between the pasture and the river and this pasture. So ExxonMobil did the right thing, and they sent a remediation crew. And that remediation crew succeeded in introducing another invasive plant to the pasture, probably from some other place that they remediated before then. So this was the plant. When I moved there 3 years later, this was the only plant growing in this pasture, and the goats wouldn't touch it. And so we were having to buy feed from off of the property to feed these goats. And I was kicking the ball to Lucy and telling her, man, these guys with their documentary really missed their chance. They should have been talking to me and you. And but they left, and they didn't put me in their movie. And they did miss their window, because the real story happened a few weeks later when this weird weed, this unidentified weed, bloomed, and suddenly the goats who wouldn't touch it gobbled it. And me and Alexis and Mike and the 5 farm dogs stood on the porch with cocktails that first night and watched a goat circus, because the goats went crazy. The little baby goats like climbed on their mamas and then jumped off and did cartwheels and ran across the field, and the old lady goats like rolled over in fits of ecstasy. And Mike took a little break from the goat party to do some research, and he found out that this invasive weed was called henbane, and it's native to Europe, and it's actually a medicinal plant. Well, it's toxic, but in small levels it's medicinal, and it's medicinal for its psychoactive properties. It causes hallucinations and specifically the feeling of flying. So we had a herd of hallucinating goats burning around this pasture. And it was surreal. And I guess the pasture really, like, there was a threshold and then there was the beyond that. But my roommates, you know, they're these activists and they're pretty hardcore, and they get things done. So they got the goats off the henbane, and they took a flight out to Bellingham to Seattle, then up to Bellingham to contest this port that was going to go along with the railroad. The coal was going to get shipped from the Tongue River to Bellingham to be shipped to China to make awesome plastic garbage. And so the roommates were once again gone, and I once again woke in the night to practice my stillness, because, oh my God, I had this creepy feeling. And I peeked with one little eye open, and there's Lucy staring down into the stairwell at the haunted part of the house. And I pulled the sheet over my head and nothing pulled back, but I still had to comfort myself in this moment and talk myself down, like, okay, maybe there's ghosts. And I did a really poor job of comforting myself, because all I could think about was what it would be like to be a ghost coming back to this place that was totally unrecognizable. The people had lived their whole lives and given their whole lives to this place, and then to come back and see the weather was different, the river was different, the pasture was different, the goats couldn't even be normal goats. And I drifted off to a kind of disturbed sleep with the thought that maybe it was less scary to be visited by the ghosts and more scary to be the ghosts visiting us.